Three ridiculous men, one beautiful game. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I'm joined this week by a bit of a different lineup. With me, as usual, is my fellow writer, fellow podcaster, and fellow Canadian guy, who also does a bunch of stuff for Sportsnet, about 83 things, Jamie Doyle. Jamie?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you? How was your week off the podcast?
Well, I did other things. I mean, we weren't doing the podcast, but I mean...
You just sat there. You waited.
Contrary to what people may think, we don't stop existing when the podcast isn't being recorded.
I did.
Well, yeah, psychologically we stop existing, but our corporeal forms are still around. We have a new corporeal form joining us in the studio this week. Grant is away for a month, so we have a special guest host joining us. You almost certainly recognize him from his work at Canadian Soccer News, It's Called Football, CBC Sports, Call It Football on Twitter. And earlier this week, he spoke to those uncouth barbarians over at the Footy Show, Ben Rycroft. Ben, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm all right.
This last time I was on this show was quite a long time ago. I gotta say, Grant's bedroom has changed quite a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot more microphones, a lot more lights. Yeah, he's really upgraded.
Where does he sleep here?
You don't want to know.
Yeah.
In those cupboards?
On a good night. On a good night.
I'm looking forward to, because we have a guest host and because Grant's a little bit neurotic, he's worried that you're just going to completely blow him out of the water and usurp his spot on the show.
Oh, you're not making that up. He's sitting somewhere, in between checking stats on Hindustan Aeronautic Limited Soccer Club or Sporting Club. He's going to listen to this show and say, I don't know, they're laughing at Ben more than they'd laugh at me. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
So you may not want this gig. This may not be a whole thing, but
right.
Let's just...
I'll try to underperform
really well.
For Grant's mental state.
Oh, overperform.
Overperform. Oh, maybe that'll raise his level as well then.
No, I just want to see Grant go
a little
bit nuts.
Sweat a little. Okay, yeah. That's fair, yeah.
Anything that can make Grant sweat is good. That didn't sound right at all.
No.
On this week's show, we won't speak any more about Grant's sweat, but we will get into the Suarez-Everest saga and its ongoing implications and the reactions there. We'll also be speaking with an up-and-coming Canadian star, Vancouver Whitecaps midfielder Bryce Alderson. Later in the show, in promotion relegation, we'll hit on such topics as Brazilian laborers, Japanese crackdowns, and a beloved former CONCACAF official from Trinidad and Tobago. And stay tuned for Taste the Trivia, where you'll find out how you could win a prize courtesy of our friends at Umbro Canada. But before any of that, gentlemen, the most important question, we've been off for a couple of weeks. Ben, you're joining us as a special host, so we need to address the most important pressing issue that is permeating the minds of sports fans everywhere. How about that Jeremy Lin? No?
Yeah.
Nothing?
Crickets. No, I had to find out who this kid was the other night when they sent me some questions for the Footy Show.
How about him? Isn't it inspirational?
Yeah, I get. Yeah, I'm sure people are really enthused by... I don't have a clue about this story at all. Well, I followed it like really, really loosely. I know he talks about the Bible and they're comparing him to Tebow and he beat the hell out of the Raptors the other night, but that's just the extent.
I find it inspirational. When I was growing up as a young religious Asian child. I don't know.
Who would go on to go to Harvard?
Yeah, I dreamed of playing for the Knicks.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the funny thing about this is they're making it out to be this like big underdog story. It's not as though he was sleeping on the streets. I mean, the kid went to Harvard.
Yeah, he's downgrading.
Exactly.
He's underachieving.
And they use the fact that he slept on his brother's couch as this indication that he was clearly, living in squalor. Maybe his brother just has a really nice couch.
Right. I mean, mm-hmm.
Maybe his brother was on MTV's Cribs and he's got a nicer couch than we have houses. It's better than the couch here in Grant's bedroom, I'll say that much.
But yeah, I couldn't sleep on this one.
No, better than the cupboard for sure. Enough of that nonsense. Let's get into the very serious and underreported subject matter at hand. Usually on this show, we do like to talk about the Canadian scene and what's happening on these shores. But number one, it's February, so there ain't that much going on. And number two, this is an issue that goes beyond, I think, the two individual players and the two individual teams involved. And there's issues and implications that go beyond that. So for anybody who's been living under a rock and is unfamiliar with the situation, of course, Luis Suarez of Liverpool made some kind of racially motivated remark to Patrice Evra, got an 8-game suspension over the weekend. They played each other. Evra extends his hand to Suarez pregame. Suarez declines to shake it. The hoopla ensues, accusations to and fro. Ben, I'm going to turn to you first on this one, because you are a Liverpool fan yourself.
Sure.
And so I'm going to ask you, going to throw out a typically double-barreled question and say, what are your general thoughts about this, and what are your thoughts about the reactions that we've seen from some other Liverpool fans? I mean, a lot of Liverpool fans are taking this very, very much to heart. You know, I've seen people act as though it's a grand conspiracy against Suarez and against their club. Do you buy into any of that? What do you think of all this?
Well, as far as the conspiracy stuff goes, I think you'll find that with any club. When a player is caught in the wrong end of the limelight, you'll see the supporters, the hardcore supporters, defending them to the end, regardless if he shot somebody or said some racist statements. They're going to defend him, and I don't think it's that dissimilar from anything else. I still think it's a little ridiculous. I think what got lost in a lot of this, in the report, in the referee's report, Evra have said to Suarez, he called him Saduka, which, if you don't know what that means, it's a highly derogatory term from South American culture. And it's in the Spanish communities as well as some of the European communities. And it's meant to denigrate South Americans who come from a lower standing in life. It's like calling someone a bum, but on a much larger level.
A racially charged bum.
Right. And I think for also what gets lost in that is that in Suarez calling him Negrito, in South American culture, what that means is someone who comes from black hair. Suarez himself, from what I've been told, would be called Negrito in his own community, in that he has black hair. And that's what the term means for people from Uruguay. And I'm not dissuading any of the use of what he said. I think obviously you have to be aware of the culture that you're in the English-speaking media, and using those types of words obviously is going to cause the reaction that it has and hid. But lost within this is the attitudes and actions of Patrick Evra as well. And again, I'm not excusing Suarez in any way, but I think that part of this, what has gotten lost, is the actions of Patrice as well.
Ben, as you say there, I think a lot of people who don't know a lot of the nuance of the story and the nuance of what was said, as you just spelled out, look at the headlines and they say, well, someone made a racist remark. Racism is bad. They were heavily punished. That's good. We're going to crack down on racism, and that's that. But Jamie, I'm going to throw this one to you. Luis Suarez is, of course, no stranger to controversy. He's, had a couple of incidents in the past few years where his name has been in the headlines for the wrong reason. You know, the handball in the World Cup, biting an opponent. So my question to you is it easier for soccer fans in general to vilify a guy like Luis Suarez or a guy like John Terry, who's undergoing his own racial remark saga at present? Is it easier for fans to vilify these guys because they happen to be dicks in general as well?
I think it's certainly easier with John Terry because he's been accused of doing. Yeah, and like his past is just kind of like against anyone's, you know, guy code. There's certain things you don't do, and he did them. Suarez, maybe a little bit less, because biting someone is just kind of funny. And the handball, that's
just like...
Not if
you're the one being bitten.
No, fair enough.
Or if you're biting Wayne Bridge's wife.
Hey-o.
And the handball in the World Cup is just, I mean, that's just kind of cheating in sports. Well, it's a bit different. It's not like a general life, you're a bad guy kind of thing. I think the huge... Like, why this became such a big issue might partly lay at the fault of Liverpool as a club who dealt with this in a PR way in just about the worst way you can.
Mm-hmm.
I understand Kenny Dalglish is not, like, a PR expert by any stretch, and he certainly has a very understandable coach's desire or manager's desire to stand by his players through thick and thin, but at some point you have to change up the message from, like, well, I don't see what he did wrong, to when everyone else is just like, well, he did this. And what he did is, in a way, like even under the circumstances, you know, wrong, or just not backing down from it is wrong, and no admission of guilt, at least, is wrong. And at some point, you just have to say, well, this happened, it's a regrettable incident, we're going to move on from it, we're not going to try and defend what is in the past anymore, and just move on. But Liverpool seems to at least have been, until the owner stepped in, determined to just hammer on this idea of innocence, and it seems to be really self-defeating. A, it perpetuates the issue, and B, in a world where you can't just be a really big club in England, you have to reach out to foreign markets. You need to get all this money. You can't through a fault of your own or through no fault of your own, develop this idea that, oh, Liverpool, I remember them, they're that racist club from England. That's not going to endear you to foreign markets, which,
Well, it depends on which foreign market, you know.
I suppose there are
plenty of people around the world who they'd suddenly buy Liverpool kits.
Dalglish was really caught between a rock and a hard place, too, though. I mean, you
absolutely
have to, in one respect, you have one of your best players, if not your best player at the time, and you're going to want to defend him, because if you take it into the press and you slam him in any way, mm-hmm. he's going to turn on your club and look for a transfer. And so in some ways, yes, he absolutely lost the PR battle of sorts, because he didn't explain a nuance to Suarez, yeah. and he didn't explain a nuance to the larger picture. And if he comes out and he slams Suarez, Suarez is going to leave. If he comes out and he defends him, they slam the club. So yeah. there was really no easy solution in this. But you're right in that if they had handled it properly from the get-go and admitted to something and at least apologized in some respect, a lot of this would have still be gone.
And then the refusal to shake Evra's hand is just, regardless of what's happened, I mean, at some point, Suarez just has to be, all right, I'm just going to be the bigger man. I'm just going to shake his hand. It's all over with. It's done with. And knowing that everyone's watching, and then it just seems like the worst decision to mm-hmm. to not shake his hand.
No,
it's just
like
this whole thing blow back. I mean, the worst decision would be to punch him in the face while wearing a KKK mask or something like that, but just not shaking his hand. Just getting
what kind
a
of suspension
whole thing.
Would that carry?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would have hoped somebody would have noticed that before he got out to the handshake.
They might have. Just, yeah, they might have.
Who's that guy with the sheet on his head? Oh well, where's Luis?
Just in the tunnel.
But I mean, you guys mentioned you both say that what was already kind of a bad situation was made worse by Suarez's handling of it, the club's handling of it. And the fact that that this just exacerbated what was already a tough situation. But Ben, what if in light of the increased emphasis and attention that's being focused upon these kind of remarks that are being said on the field in light of FIFA's Kick Racism Out of Football campaign, say at some point in the future a player who is universally loved at a club that is universally respected. Let's just say, Lionel Messi is caught saying something on the field to a player that can be construed as racially charged. What do you think? Do you think that the reaction there would be different than the kind of reaction that we've seen to these two incidents that have happened in England?
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on it earlier in that in the case of Suarez and in the case of Terry, they all already had this reputation of being not really that great of human beings, whereas Lionel Messi is held up as a god in some respects. And
he's kind of a puppy dog.
Yeah. And
I mean, he's just an overgrown child.
That you hold over your head like in the Lion King.
Yeah.
He's Simba. Lionel Messi is Simba. That's a great comparison. I think it would be a completely different scenario, that people would be much more willing to give him the benefit of the doubt just because of who he is, and not just because of how good of a player he is, but just based on his record. And I think that's pretty normal throughout sport.
So, Jamie, I mentioned the FIFA's Kick Racism Out of Football campaign. Obviously, to whatever extent is possible, it would be good for racism to be eliminated from sports and from all facets of life. And, obviously the incidents where you have fans taunting racist abuse or clubs acting in a discriminatory way towards players, those actions need to be stamped out and eliminated. And FIFA is taking some steps in that regard. But is it realistic to think that comments that can be construed as racially motivated will ever be eliminated from soccer or from sports in general?
No, and I think, you get just massive amounts of people, especially when you count the fans in. You have
dicks too.
Well, 50,000 charged up, possibly boozed up guys in a really emotional
possibly.
they absolutely. Are eventually someone's going to say something wildly inappropriate just because a certain percentage of them are just going to be not great people. I mean, it's just a huge volume of people. Some of them aren't going to be good, and they're going to do things that are regrettable. And also, I'd say maybe just, you catch these people out, you catch them on camera, you charge them with stuff, it just kind of drives it underground. It's a lot less overt, but I don't think it's changed people's minds necessarily. So it's good, obviously. I mean, any efforts to stamp it out or even just to push it away from the game and make it less overt and less maybe tacitly accepted is good, but I don't know if you can stamp it out this way. That seems like it's a lot of a longer haul, and it has to go way beyond football.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is that I don't think anyone's under any delusions about Suarez and Terry being the first players to use racial comments on the field. I mean, I imagine it would have been much worse in the past. Is it just a matter of we're now much more aware of players and there's much more opportunity for them to slip up because there is 24/7 coverage, because there are multiple cameras, because they have access to Twitter where they can fire off ill-conceived thoughts without a second to think about it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right in that respect. That the 24/7 media aspect of it is that everything does get covered and covered ad nauseum. To go back to what Jamie was saying though about the idea of stamping out racism, it's not something that FIFA can fix, but socially they need to take a stance because otherwise, these people who are held up as members of the community that are looked upon to be morally strong or at least looked upon as heroes to young children, they have to be seen in that light as being morally proper is the term. The thing that gets lost in all of that is that you can't change the way that people act. You can't change the way that they are, but you can set certain moral standards that you can hope will reflect on the larger populace. And this is getting really, really serious for a soccer podcast.
Well, Ben, as I said, you know, you spent yesterday kind of, you know, with the uncouth barbarians over at the Footy Show,
and they're
I heard a lot of what you were saying, and I figured, you know what, Ben, you know, I think people who maybe listen to you in certain bits and pieces, they may think that you're, you know, just all about swearing and controversial remarks, and I wanted to give you an opportunity.
Thank you.
To expound intelligently on very important societal subjects.
That's very nice of you. Maybe I'll release a press release later today. Handle my PR a little better than Dad Galish has.
Well, the Whitecaps have also had a PR situation as of late, which is not directly connected to what we're saying, but it does bring some of what we've been mentioning back to Canadian shores. A couple of days ago, Whitecaps player Lee Nguyen put out a tweet to a fellow teammate using a homophobic epithet with far too many G's in it. He quickly deleted it, retracted it, apologized. The Whitecaps came out and issued an apology on his behalf. Jamie, things like this, you know, athletes being constantly monitored on Twitter by fans and media and everything like that. Are we at the point where something like this is that worthy of attention, or is it a matter of as Ben said, maybe just, you know, realizing that people are people. People are going to say things, and we have to look at it within the context and circumstances in which those comments exist.
Yeah, I mean, I think eventually, at some point, you've just got a window with Twitter, especially. You've got a window into the mind of a huge number of testosterone-fueled young men. And obviously, you know, the wrong kind of thing is going to come out. They're going to say stupid things. If Twitter was around when I was, you know, a teenager, I can't even imagine all the regrettable things that I would put up there, which may haunt you for the rest of your days. Yeah. It just seems like a bad idea for athletes to even have access to computers at all these days. I mean, athletes are not necessarily the most intelligent and insightful group, often because just, you know, they're teenagers, some of them, or they're in their young 20s and they're not at all mature and they maybe haven't had to mature in certain ways. And if you just let them spout off into like the internet netherworld, that just go and everyone gets to read it, it's just a horrible idea. It doesn't mean necessarily that they are homophobic or even that they are racist or that they are anything that comes across. It just means that they're a bit of an idiot who said something that can be taken all kinds of ways, and maybe that it doesn't reflect who they actually are, apart from just being an idiot young man.
Well, I think in the context of Canadian soccer over the last year, where you had a former Impact player, come out and admit to being gay, and him talking about how difficult it was for him to come forward because of that, and feeling like, and I mean, it wasn't any secret. Anybody in the Canadian soccer community pretty much knew that this was the case, but he felt like he needed to hide it. And so when you have things like this, where you're using words that are, you know, in the context, probably not intended to be that, but as a word is generally not an acceptable term. In the same way that the word that Suarez used has been driven out of community and has been driven out of polite society, this is a word that by the homosexual community is no longer acceptable. And over the next generation, I think you'll probably find the same way, the same approach will be taken. And the reaction was over the top, and there are people out there who just want to jump on anything and make a big deal out of it. I don't think that that was necessarily the case here, because people did see that he was making a bad joke to a friend, and it wasn't really blown out of proportion, but it does show that people are aware of these things and they're watching these things, and players do need to have to monitor and be their own PR people every day, because you can't get away with things these days. You can't get away with saying something like that and not expect there to be someone out there who's going to have a bad reaction to it and is going to make a big deal of it, or take it to their own communities and they'll make a big deal of it.
I've heard a lot about this polite society over the years. I'd really like to visit it someday.
Yeah, I've never been invited myself.
Well, one day. We'll hold out for it. They're in beta testing right now. Hopefully someone will send us an invite. Good discussion, gentlemen. I'm sure that everyone who is listening, their mind has now been made up on the issue, and no one needs to talk about these issues anymore. We've settled it.
Sweet.
Cool. We will now move on to, as mentioned off the top, an interview with an up-and-coming Canadian star. He was the captain of our under-17 team at last summer's FIFA Under-17 World Cup. Now part of the U-20 setup and a midfielder for the Vancouver Whitecaps, Bryce Alderson, after this. Joining us now on the line from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canadian under-20 and Vancouver Whitecaps midfielder Bryce Alderson. Bryce, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Now, you were with the Whitecaps residency program last year, but this is your first year up with the senior team in training camp and in preseason. As a young player, how does that feel?
It feels great. I was lucky enough last year to jump in and take part in a lot of training with the first team, but so far this year it's been fantastic to get in with them and take part in all the sessions and be on time, be full time training with them. So it's been great.
Right now, your head coach Martin Rennie has MLS veteran John Thornton, two former Carolina RailHawks, and Matt Watson and Jim Davidson, Gershon Coffey, David Chimento, and yourself, as well as apparently Barry Robson now as well. Has Rennie given you any indication where he sees you in his plans for the near future?
I think the staff as a whole has been great in terms of dealing with me and communicating with me. And for me right now, it's important just to try to take what I can from each day and continue to try to learn and grow and kind of pick up on some of the veteran guys in terms of what it takes to be in the squad come a Saturday. So right now I'm still trying to pick up and learn as much as I can. So they've been great, though, so far to kind of help me along in that process.
Has anyone in particular been kind of taking on a role as a mentor for you since you've got up with the big club?
Yeah, well, I think both John Thornton and Joe, I think, are fantastic leaders. I think they're great professionals. They've been doing this for a long time, and I think they're both extremely professional in how they conduct themselves. So I think they've both been great, and yeah, I would say they probably took on a bit of a mentor role amongst most of the younger players. So it's great to have someone like that you can look up to and kind of model yourself after.
So they're not just giving you the wrong time for training or sending you to the wrong building so you don't take their jobs?
No, there hasn't been any of that yet. So they got a little bit over control with Rookie Idol back in preseason, but other than that, they've been great.
What? Rookie Idol? What's that?
Rookie Idol, it's apparently a standing tradition with the club. So every year preseason, they get all the first-year players to kind of get up and either do it by themselves or together and kind of do a little song and a dance or something like that. So kind of...
What song did you sing?
A little laugh at the rookies.
What song did you have to sing?
Oh, I can't share that. That's confidential.
That's inside the club kind of stuff.
Well, we know the Canadian women's team likes to bust out some Celine Dion. Can you confirm whether or not it was Celine Dion, Bryce?
I can confirm that it was not Celine Dion.
Oh, okay. Shame.
I like how you said apparently it's a tradition. I think they've just made it up to screw you over.
That's what I was thinking, too. I think they just made it up for this year, but I guess we'll see next year, right?
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll be on the other side of it that time. Been a lot of turnover in the team in the off season. You know, as Ben said, new coach, a lot of new players coming in. Last year, suffice to say, a tough year for the Whitecaps, but with all the new players, including yourself, coming in as well as a new coach, what's the feeling about how the team is looking for this season?
I think there's a positive atmosphere amongst the club, amongst the players, amongst the staff. We've added a lot of players, but it's not just what the number of players we've added. We've added a ton of quality, which should help us moving forward. So I think everyone's excited to start the season and kick off on March 10th.
I want to take it back to 2010, Bryce. You made the decision to leave the CSL and enroll in the Whitecaps Academy system. I wonder if you can tell us about that decision to leave Ontario, your home here, and joined the academy in Vancouver, as opposed to Toronto FC's academy, which was in your backyard. What was it that Vancouver offered that Toronto could not provide or would not offer at that time?
Yeah, well, it was after the under-16 provincial national championships, and Vancouver made it clear they were interested in having me, and they flew me out and showed me around, and I was very impressed by what I saw, and I got a great feeling from the club in terms of their future for me and how it would work out. So it's kind of that feeling of confidence with the club that I thought that at that point in time, Vancouver was my best option. So that's made it an easy decision.
You talk about your future with the club. If you could set out maybe your ideal number of games or a number of starts that you're going to get this season, what would that be? What would be your goal?
Well, it's hard to say a goal and then ideal, you know what I mean?
If
I could play 38 games, that'd be fantastic. Obviously, that's not the case. So as I said, right now, I'm just trying to learn as much as I can and hopefully perform well in training and hopefully get some minutes. But in terms of a goal or an ideal, I'm not focused on like the number right now or number starts, etc. So
now, there are a number of players who came out of the Whitecaps Academy in recent years that have caught on with clubs in Europe. I'm thinking of guys like Randy Edwini Bonsu, Marcus Haber, Ethan Gage. How do you feel when you see the success that those guys have been able to have so far?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's very positive for the club. I think they, like I said, they have a great youth system and they develop players well to play across the world, whether that's North America, Europe, wherever that may be. So I think it's great for the club and encouraging for all the players coming through the academy.
If you can talk about the connection between the academy system that's sort of springing up here in North America and in Canada and the connection to the national team. I mean, if you look at the national team that you play on now, the under-19s, it's primarily made up of kids from the Impact Academy, Toronto's Academy, Vancouver's Academy. Can you talk about that in terms of the development and the impact that it has had over the last little while on the national team as a player and also as a professional?
Oh, for me, I think it's the best thing that could happen for Canadian soccer. These youth academies popping up, and now, like you said, we have one, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, and I think it's fantastic. The younger we can start them, the better, so clubs can begin molding their players and really developing them. I think the biggest problem is that players from 8 or 9 or whenever they kind of step out of that participation house league level, it depends on the coach they have. It's all for the most part volunteer coaches, and I was fortunate enough to have a fantastic coach from the time I was 10 up until 15, 16 when the provincial program and the Whitecaps took over. But I think that's the biggest problem was that the coaching, and I think we have to give them credit obviously because they're just volunteer coaches, but at the same time they don't have the expertise that professional coaches at these academies have. So I think when players can come in at 10, 11, 12 into these professional academies and be molded up, I think that bodes well for Canadian soccer as a whole. And I think we're going to start seeing that in the national team performances.
Obviously, you made a big commitment at a young age. I was hearing about you in OSA circles as young as 14. For someone else coming up through the system now, what age group do you think that kids need to make a commitment to being a professional player to have a shot at actually making it either into MLS, into one of the academy systems, or onto Europe?
Right. I think that's tough because I think it's different for everyone. I don't think you can force a player into that. They kind of have to develop that themselves. For me, it was probably around 15 where I got extremely, extremely serious and started training more, focusing more, all that kind of stuff. So I think it depends on the player. But for me, the earlier you can do it is the better. Up to a point, obviously, when you're younger, just enjoy your football. But as you get older, start to take it more and more seriously. I think with the academies we have, I think that's fantastic that these players will be in a full-time environment when they're 10, 11, 12 and already on a professional route. So I think that's fantastic.
Now, you're a player who obviously got involved in the Canadian national team setup quite early on, 2-time reigning under-17 male player of the year and the captain of our squad at the FIFA U-17 World Cup last year in Mexico. It was a tournament that Canada hadn't qualified for in 16 years, so you guys made a little bit of history just by being there. And then, of course, there was the famous 2-2 draw against England. So it's obviously a huge experience, but if you could boil it down, what was that experience like for you, being at that tournament and leading the Canadian team?
Oh, it was fantastic. I think it was great for all of us. We started preparations. It must have been over a year before the World Cup, so we were, as a team, we were together for a long time, and there was a belief and a cohesion amongst the team that we could climb, that we could do well. And I think we we showed a little bit of what we were about. Unfortunately, it didn't go quite as planned. I don't think we got the results that we were looking for, but I think we showed where we were about. I think it was a fantastic experience for all the players involved.
News breaking today that Barry Robson will be joining the squad mid-season. Whenever you can tell us anything you know about that player and what the talk around the locker room is about bringing in such a player mid-season.
Yeah, well, we just, as I was getting a word from Nate, our PR guy, that they had signed him. So that's extremely exciting for the club, and we'll look forward to getting him in soon and getting him into training.
Bryce, has there been any suggestion that you may be part of the setup for the Canadian U-23 team that's going to attempt to qualify for the Summer Olympics this year?
Yes, actually, I got a word. I'll be got released from the club. Agreed to release me. So on March, I believe it's the 13th, I'll be going to the camp. So hopefully that goes well, and we'll see what happens.
And currently, you're a member of the U-20 team as it is with new head coach Nick Dasovich. What was it like? You've been with the team for one camp back in December. What was it like working with Nick?
Oh, fantastic! I think he's a fantastic coach, and I think he shows his professionalism in the way he coaches. He's extremely respectful of the players, and he puts the players first. And it's fantastic. He's a player's coach, and the players want to perform for him and do well for him because of the confidence and the belief that he instills in you. So I think he's top notch, and we'll just hope that we can do well and qualify for him.
One last thing, Bryce. We hit on this a little bit earlier. Just as it happened. But usually on the show, when we speak to players, we like to ask them what the musical scene is in their world, both with either with them or with their teammates. We had Nick Dasovich on a number of weeks ago, and he was saying that the U-20 team, he was in camp at the time. He said that you and the rest of the team listened to a lot of music that he didn't understand or appreciate, and he wanted to open your eyes to some real classic music like AC/DC and Lynyrd Skynyrd and stuff like that. So I guess it's a two-part question. What kind of music are you guys listening to, and did Nick actually go ahead and try to ingratiate Lynyrd Skynyrd into the mix?
Three answers. One, it's Drake all day. It's got to be Drake.
That's what everyone's saying.
Huh?
No, everyone we've spoken to, they love Drake.
Oh, of course, breakfast, lunch, dinner, sleeping, working out, resting, whatever. It's got to be Drake. But in terms of Nick, no, Nick did not try to introduce any music, which is good. I don't think it would have went over well. So if he would have popped out the iPod mid song, I don't think the players would have appreciated it. So
maybe you can impress him by showing up for camp with a nice like 80s hairband wig on.
With an 80s 80s hairband and an 80s CD mix, huh?
Yeah, the wig, the long hair, maybe like a sleeveless AC/DC T-shirt.
You never know.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be seeing you out on the field this year, Bryce. Hopefully not in an 80s wig, but we'll see how that goes. That has been Canadian U-20 and Vancouver Whitecaps midfielder Bryce Alderson. Bryce, good luck this season, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We now come to, as always, the final portion of the show, promotion relegation, where we each pick a story we like to promote and one that we don't like to relegate. Normally, I would throw to Grant first, but as he is off in India developing his burgeoning love of his new favorite team, Hindustan Aeronautics Limited Sporting Club, I cannot ask him what he would like to promote. So, Jamie, I will pose the question to you this week. Who or what would you like to promote?
This promotion was a lot easier before about 2:30 yesterday. I'm promoting Thierry Henry.
Never heard of him.
And basically, it's just the sports comebacks tend to be awful, sad kind of things. Like people come back to their site of past glories, and then they kind of fumble around, and it becomes increasingly obvious that age has caught up to them, and they just kind of foul their own legacy. But up to 2:30 yesterday, at least, Henri's comeback was a storybook. It was exactly what supporters imagine is going to happen when the guy comes back and he rides in and saves the team. I mean, Henri played, it was about 7 games. He had 3 shots on target and he scored in all of them. I'd read that stat. I haven't actually checked it out. But I mean, regardless, he's got 2 game-winning goals, one in an FA Cup, so they go to the next round, the other one in a very big game against Sunderland that puts him above Chelsea in 4th place. And it's just, it's exactly, he, not only did he not foul his legacy, he actually enhanced it because he's come back now as a kind of a fan of the team, and he's scoring goals for them, and he's, he just seems to be more excited to play for Arsenal than he did when he was an actual Arsenal player, not just a loanee. So,
Jamie, just for those who are listening who may not be aware of what it is that you mean that took place on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m.
the 4-0
Eastern.
The 4-0 mauling that Arsenal endured at the hands of AC Milan. But even then, Henry made at least a tiny difference. By coming on, Arsenal was marginally better. He set up the only decent chance that Arsenal had to score. So he's still, despite being 34 years old, he still is at that caliber where he can have an impact at the highest levels of the game.
Are you getting to the point, as I am, where you hear about ages that are old in sports and you hear commentators refer to it as if they're ancient and it just makes you feel even more worried about your own physiology?
I'm starting to think I'm never going to play in the Champions League.
I'm a day or two away from signing my contract. Yeah. I still firmly believe.
All right, well.
Is this breaking news we've got on some Canadian guys? We don't normally. We had the Doyle for Canadian right back pitch, but oh, Rycroft, are you joining some new club as a striker?
Yeah, the over 30 or under 35 league on Thursday nights at the Hangar. It's a big signing. Really excited. Performance bonuses are included, which means I think a beer after the game if I score.
Beer and a half.
Yeah, well, that was the sticking point. I demanded pretzels, and they weren't having it. So.
Well, it's good. You really got to hardball them. I mean, things are once you get up to UCL Elite, that's when you know the big time contracts are really in play. Ben,
big money. Yeah, I'm promoting the J League for trying to get its act together when it comes to match fixing. We've seen a number of leagues across the world over the last year pretty much deny before any problems are really there and on the surface. So clearly they're willing to at least put in some effort ahead of time. They're at least willing to admit that there are some problems within their own community, within their own system. So that's tremendous. They're setting up a third-party hotline for anyone associated with professional soccer there who wants to come forward and talk about how to deal with these types of people. That's tremendous. And also they're making inroads with the early warning system, I believe, that FIFA is setting up. So overall, over the last year, we've seen a number of leagues just continue to deny that there's any problems, and here's a club or here's a league facing their own issues head-on. So congratulations to them.
I like the idea of this early warning system where basically I think it's just if anybody approaches a Japanese soccer stadium with a briefcase full of money, just alarms start going off. Yeah, riot police come flying out of nowhere.
Yeah, very, very. They're just hidden in the grass.
Yes.
Very meteorological of them. That's a league in Japan. I think I read this morning as well that there's the ongoing investigation in China about match fixing, and I think a referee was given 7 years in jail for a part that he was playing in some fixed matches there.
Yeah,
so
China seems uniquely positioned to really crack down on this with their ad hoc take on law. If they really wanted to deal with this, they could just
prove it innocent.
Done. Yeah.
I think there may actually be alarm towers and turrets.
Which may suggest, and I'm not implying this at all, that they maybe aren't too interested.
Jamie.
Hey, now.
That's dangerous.
Well, Squiz, what would you like to promote?
Oh, yeah, right.
Something safe, please.
Oh, it's completely safe unless you're involved in it. This is tangentially related to soccer, as most of my promotions and relegations are. It's a new sport. I think we can kind of give up on soccer now because I have seen the future of sport. You guys may have seen it as well. Some other folks may have seen
taser
it.
Ball.
Ultimate taser ball.
Taser ball.
Yes. Jamie, have you heard about this? Regular taser ball. It's ultimate taser ball.
I was thinking
regular
that,
taser ball wasn't cutting it.
It was lacking.
I need body shocks that kill a man.
Now this is a new sport that's being developed by completely legitimate businessmen, I'm sure. There was a video of it on YouTube kind of setting up some of the more controversial players. And they showed video footage of a game in progress. And it's essentially guys running around on what kind of looks like a indoor boarded soccer field. And they're carrying this gigantic soccer-colored beach ball type thing. They're just trying to throw it into the opposing goal. Pretty straightforward, except each of them has a taser, which they can use on opponents or, I suppose, if something goes awry, on teammates as well. Now, The creators of this league, which I'm sure will come to fruition, have said that it's that it's not like police level tasers. It's not going to completely incapacitate somebody, but you know, it's still strong enough to really give someone a significant shock. And you'll be happy to know, Jamie.
Why will I be happy to know this?
Well, you'll be happy to know
because we put you in the league, Jamie.
Yeah.
Congratulations!
Oh, no.
That you couldn't, you know, whether or not you're going to make the Canadian men's national team, you have been. I've sent in an application on your behalf to be a member. Of the Toronto Terror, which is the team that is going to be representing the city of Toronto in Ultimate Taser Ball. Now, you know, kind of get around the fact that tasers are illegal for use by civilians in Canada. They'll find a way around that, I'm sure. And this league will be as successful, if not more successful, than the Lingerie Football League. So
should combine the two of them. Lingerie Taser Ball.
Ultimate Lingerie Taser Ball.
That's the new evolution of sport.
On ice.
Ooh.
On ice.
With
dogs.
With 80s with 80s wigs.
Well, that goes without saying, I think. Oh, my God.
So, Jamie...
Wait, have you actually done this, or are you just saying that?
Have I done what? Signed you up?
Signed me up.
Well, if you...
I think I'm going to now.
If you get a strange package in the mail in a couple of weeks from some, you know, P.O. box in Trenton, New Jersey or something, you have an idea of what it may be.
If I get a taser in the mail...
With a uniform.
Yeah.
You'll know what to do with it.
Yeah, I'll come after
you.
Well,
congratulations, Jamie. Like, I mean, I thought my signing was big, but yours is clearly... you might want to change this podcast and just talk strictly taser ball.
Some Canadian guys
taser
talking about
weekly.
Taser ball.
No, it'll be two guys talking about taser ball and one guy playing it who can't talk anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you may not have the same contract negotiations as Ben did because after being tased, you really can't process food for a couple of days.
No, but I think that as someone with a taser, he has a much greater leverage point when dealing with management because I don't think management will have tasers.
No, that's
true.
So he
can just march into anyone's office and demand some kind of better compensation.
Mm-hmm. Actually,
not sure what they're getting paid.
Bigger taser.
Bigger tasers.
You know what, Jamie? I've just thought of something. I hope you get this package in the next, you know, couple of weeks because you and I are playing in the Scores World Vision charity tournament and at the beginning of March.
Yeah.
Donate money for World Vision. If we happen to...
Is there tasers in that?
Well, I was going to say, if you get that taser in time, I think our team is going to have a definite advantage.
Yeah,
we're coming
for
you, Paul Brothers.
Dun, dun, dun.
Jamie?
Yes.
Who or what would you like to relegate, and don't say me?
No, because if I do get a taser in the mail, I think that would actually be pretty cool.
That's worse than a relegation.
I'm going to relegate Brazil.
Take
the whole country.
Brazil.
Yeah. I know that
with your beaches and beautiful women and wonderful food.
It's a few years in the making, but I mean, well, it's actually apparently a few years not in the making because Brazil's ability to put together a World Cup seems very suspect these days. We've got stadium workers going on strike because they haven't been paid, which seems pretty reasonable. It seems very questionable whether or not there's going to be a whole slate of properly appointed stadiums by the time people, you know, try and play soccer in them at the World Cup. We've also got a key World Cup bill I'm reading from Yahoo Sports. Basically, just the government needs to pass this bill to set in motion all kinds of things, funding, I think, and just a bunch of things that they need to do to get things done to have the World Cup take place at all. And they just kind of, they couldn't get the bill done before Carnival started, basically. Which just seems like, we're all going to go on holiday. I'll just do it afterwards.
Yeah.
And now it's just been delayed, and it seems like once it's been delayed for a little bit, it takes a lot longer to get this thing back on, you know, on the table, as it were, for Brazil's parliament. So
they, like, prorogued parliament for Carnival?
I think that, I just kind of assumed they did that anyways, really. It seems like that kind of happened in place down there. But basically this plus the fact that, I mean, I've read that airports aren't going to be ready on time to, you know, get fans to where they want to be. The rail links aren't going to be set up. So basically Brazil will just be games happening in distant, unreachable places in possibly half-finished stadiums. That's what I'm getting.
So like Africa.
Kind of, yeah. Well, once you get there, you can kind of get around, but not in Brazil.
But wasn't this like, I'm not going to smash your stuff, but wasn't this like the same story in the lead up to 2010? Was that... It just seems like every time around, it's like, oh, it's not going to work out. We're screwing everything up.
I think in Africa, it was just basically like...
Well, no, they had worker strikes, and the stadiums weren't going to be ready, and like the infrastructure wasn't going to be there, and the crime was going to be so bad, and the prostitutes weren't nice enough. Like,
Well, that's actually not a problem in Brazil.
I've heard they're very polite. They're members of polite society.
No, and I'm sure it all, I mean, somehow these things always work themselves out, probably with vast infusions of cash, and I don't know where that would come from, but it just seems like they knew this was coming for a long time. They didn't even have to, like, this was just, it was given to them without even the normal kind of due process, as much as FIFA has a due process for stuff. It just seems like it shouldn't be this long coming. They could have been ready for the World Cup to happen yesterday if they really, you know, put their minds to it.
Well, there's only one thing that can be done if Brazil isn't ready in time. Move it to Qatar.
Move it to Qatar, yeah.
Yeah, just get things going.
Seems reasonable.
You know, there's no lack of money or influence there.
Or Canada.
They're going to air condition all of Brazil.
Yeah, maybe that's the big problem. Yeah. It's taking too long to air condition the whole country.
Makes sense.
Ben, mm-hmm. Who or what would you like to relegate?
I'm going to relegate Rob Ford and the Toronto City Council for deciding to tax the city's soccer players with new fees with absolutely little or no notice. A number of clubs this week came out talking about the fees and how much it was going to cost them. In some cases, upwards of $30,000. I found it really interesting for a mayor who weighs as much as he does and has been talking about let's all lose weight together, that he decided to essentially tax a group of individuals who are, at least in some respects, trying to live healthy lives. This in itself is a ridiculous move by council to drop these types of fees on clubs, which in some cases as much as $15 more per player this late in the year is ridiculous. You're going to see a number of leagues fold this year, a number of clubs that are going to really struggle financially, all during a time where Rob Ford holds a press conference every Monday to tell people how much weight he lost. I just had to shake my head this week. Rob Ford, you're fat behind for taxing the city soccer players I'm relegating.
I think Gravy Train FC is really going to get hit by this one, especially.
Yeah.
New up-and-coming club, Shepherd Extension FC. They've got all the money in the world that they need. Maybe the ins and outs of Toronto city politics may not be... this may not be the...
We're hitting on big things today. Racism.
Yeah, no, I mean for me, because I could... No. Mm-hmm. It's definitely important stuff. I just don't want to get going.
How important is the stuff that you've got to relegate?
Well, it's kind of important. We were speaking earlier about all the due process involved in FIFA and, you know, the flow of money and whatnot. I am relegating, probably not for the first time, good old smiling Jack Warner. I'm just going to read directly from the Daily Mail here.
Smiling Jack Warner.
Just directly from...
he's a riverboat dealer.
Directly from the Daily Mail. Funds donated for earthquake hit Haiti that never made it to the Caribbean island were paid into a bank account controlled by former FIFA Vice President Jack Warner, the Trinidad and Tobago Football Federation insisted on Thursday. Some £440,000 of emergency aid money has gone missing since it was donated 2 years ago, and FIFA have frozen funding to the TTFF until they explain what has happened. Now, the allegation goes on to alleged that Warner was the only person that controlled the bank account into which this money was paid, and so the subsequent allegations are that he did something with them that had little to do with relieving Haiti after the earthquake. Now, again, these are all unproven, and Warner has stepped up and said, I had nothing to do with this. It's all a conspiracy against me. You know, despite the fact that I've been accused of corruption 25 times, there can't possibly be fire where there's smoke. So,
and there was a picture of him delivering a case of water bottles in Haiti. So, come on, Squiz, where are you going with this?
That's like the world's most expensive shipment of water then, $440,000 worth of water. You know what? I think that early detection system goes off whenever Jack Warner comes to a field.
Yeah, or flies over Japan.
Flies in on that helicopter of his.
What? That is the early warning system. Jack Warner is the early warning system.
Jack Warner's helicopter is the early warning system. That brings us to the end of promotion relegation, but not the end of the show, because, of course, we need to get to Taste the Trivia, the weekly trivia challenge we do where both the questions and answers are provided by you, the listeners. Last week, or I should say last time, 2 weeks ago, the question was, who was Canada's top scorer in 2004 Women's Olympic qualifying? The correct answer was Aisha Jamani, who was 16 and attended the University of Nebraska. The winner, who provided us with the correct answer, third time lucky, he had a couple of close calls there, but he was the first one with the right answer this time, someone going by the moniker of Smapty Jones. And so Smapty will now be the recipient of a prize courtesy of Umbro Canada, and he has provided us with this week's question, which is as follows. When was the Canadian men's national team's first official sanctioned win, their opponent, and who scored for Canada?
I know two of the three.
Well, you're not eligible, Ben.
Well, what about next week?
Well, we'll see about that. Ben, if you believe you have the correct answer, or if anyone else believes they have the correct answer, they should head over to facebook.com/somecanadianguys. If you're the first one with the right answer there, you will win a prize, and you will have the very honored position of providing us with a question for next week's Taste the Trivia. Yes, Jamie?
I think it's important also that you make up a fake name that betters or at least equals Smapty Jones.
Seems like a private investigator.
Yeah, well, Smapty.
I was thinking jazz musician.
Could be. All Everyone right. get your jazz hands going.
Yeah.
Whether or not you have a moniker, head over to the Facebook page. If you believe you have the right answer while you are on the internet, which if you're like us, you are most of the day, you can also check out what Jamie's doing over at sportsnet.ca. Jamie, what have you got on the go?
You'll see.
Dun, dun, dun,
you'll see.
As in you haven't written it yet?
Yeah.
Well, it's half written.
Okay, well, when Jamie finishes the other half, you can go and check that out. And our special guest host, Ben, you've always got plenty of stuff on the go here. Is there anything that people should check out that you've got in the works right now?
You can check out Canadian Soccer News every day. Number of writers there updating on the Vancouver Whitecaps, Montreal Impact, all the national teams in Toronto FC. And I've got my most recent column up on cbc.ca about the CIS, MLS making inroads for the university players. And finding better pathways for the university-age kids into the pros. So you can check that out over on cbc.ca.
Sounds good. And if people want to follow you on Twitter, where is that?
Call It Football.
All right. People
and
should...
on Twitter. And? You have to be on Twitter to follow me on Twitter.
No, you can, they can read what you have to write. Some very insightful and controversial things all the time. Thanks once again to our special guest co-host this week, Ben Rycroft. We will have, this is what they call teasers, another special guest co-host next week as Grant continues his journeys in India. And 2 weeks from now, we will have a season preview where we are endeavoring to look at what you can expect from all of Canada's Big Four professional clubs in 2012. But until then, subscribe to the show on iTunes so that you will get those right away as soon as I hit the internet. You can find me on Twitter at Daniel Squizzato, DanielSquizzato. Jamie, where are you on Twitter?
Also on Twitter.
Why on Twitter?
Just, you spell your name so fast. It's just so confusing.
I like the CDN soccer blog. You need to go back to that.
Yeah.
See, well, it just didn't make sense. Name. Ben, as I told you at the time, I'm not a blog. I'm a person.
Yeah, you can't prove that.
You should just go by.
I'm sitting 2 feet away from you.
Look like a
I'm
blog
touching
to
your arm.
Blog is touching my arm.
That's disgusting. You should just go by Smapty.
Smapty Jones.
Yeah.
Ben, you've been Smaptied by a blog. Jamie, what's your Twitter handle so we can leave?
It's at Doyle_Jamie. I can't even remember. It's at Doyle Jamie. You'll find it.
Yeah, whatever. You'll
follow Squiz, you'll find me.
Yeah, yeah. Till then, someone will be yammering at you again next week. Till then, this is, as always, Some Canadian Guys talking about soccer.